Hey, today we have with us a doctor of physical therapy. She's been doing this since 2017 and is passionate about helping her patients make progress to get back to keeping doing what they love. She has worked both as a traveling therapist and a clinic manager. She's also a Pacific Crest Trail thru hiker. Morgan Viswanathan, welcome back to Papa Bear Hikes.
Thank you. It's good to be back. We were just talking about how you were one of my first podcasts when I first started following PCT hikers. And so it's fun to be back now heading into my third season.
And I've been following you, Morgan, and you have been, you've been quite busy since then. I mean, you got my interest early on with what you were doing to the point where I wanted to have you on here and talk about it. But yeah, you're out there helping to keep hikers healthy and hopefully succeeding in their through hike.
Yeah, it's been, you know, it was one of those things where it was an idea I had. So I had to like satisfy that hunch. And now I've treated like, I think last time I counted, it was like over 1200 people. So that's insane. It's been so fun.
And it's so enjoyable to talk to people who are, they're living, I guess what you could say, the dream, right? You love the outdoors, you love backpacking, and you're a trained physical therapist, you're a doctor in physical therapy, and you're out there helping hikers and living in the outdoors. I just admire that so much.
I feel like I have no complaints.
Now, Morgan, what I want to talk to you about today is how do we prepare ourselves for a through hike? And this can be any through hike. This could be the Pacific Crest Trail, the Long Trail, a through hike. If it could be a few thousand miles, it could be maybe 100 or so miles for some people. And I've had people on that address the nutritional side of this. Heather Kelly from Kelly's Choices recently on. I've had Aaron Owen Mayhew, who's a registered dietitian and owner of Backcountry Foodie, on the podcast. And we talk about how in preparing for these hikes, we'll sometimes focus on our gear and the maps and how we're going to get to the trail and off the trail and what we're going to do to get into town. But we sometimes ignore the most important aspects of our hike. And as I said, I've addressed the nutritional side of it, but there's the physical preparedness. And yes, some people say I'll worry about that when I get on the trail, but there must be a logical way for us to physically prepare ourselves for a through hike.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like something that makes people feel very conflicted is like internet advice when it comes to this, because some people it works for them to just like hop on trail and they've never had an issue. What you might find if you dive deeper into their background is that they have active jobs or they have something that like keeps them a baseline fitness. So it's not really a fair thing to say like just hop on trail to everybody. But I just look at it like it's trip insurance. You know, you're embarking on an activity that relies on your body functioning and carrying you through and carrying your pack. And so training it to be able to do those things not only makes it more fun because you're not like using all of your capacity each day, which leaves you just totally dusted by the time you go to bed, but also really reduces your risk of injuries, because you're just, anytime we exercise of any kind and we're really close to our max threshold, so like if you run as far as you possibly can, like to the point where you can't run another step, that's using your whole capacity. And if you did that every day, it stands to reason you would be likely to get injured. And then same with like lifting weights, like people who power lift and things, they don't lift their max weight every time they lift. They do something, you know, below that maximum to keep building up their capacity. So then when they're doing it, they're not getting hurt and they're enjoying it. So that's how I feel about like training for things. And doing something is absolutely better than doing nothing. So it doesn't have to be overcomplicated. As even if you're taking neighborhood walks, you're going to be better off than if you didn't do anything. But there are certainly a set of things and like resistance training and things you can focus on that are the most poignant in terms of reducing your injury risk and kind of raising that capacity.
Some of the advice I've received, and I like telling people as well, is if you can't join a gym, well, maybe the best way for you to prepare for a hike is to get out and hike. and you said lead up to it, maybe get out and take some of those, take some day hikes or some neighborhood hikes. Maybe we just start with 5 or 10 pounds in your backpack and go for a short hike and then build up the weight and the distance as you go along.
Exactly. And ideally, like in a perfect world, right? Like we have all the time and all the resources, and that just isn't what it looks like for a lot of people. But assuming that it does, if you can be resistance training at least 3 days a week, and then practicing the activity you're training for. So like if it is a backpacking trip, trying to get out once or twice a week, and then any extra energy and time you have just getting a little extra cardio, that is great. That's, again, in a perfect world where you have all of the things available to you in time. But if you have less, trying to get at least 1 to 2 days of strength training is really beneficial to prevent things like tendonitis and increase your bone strength. So resistance training more so than excessive cardio is going to increase bone density and decrease your risk of stress fractures. And those are kind of what I would call like non-negotiables in terms of trail injuries that you really shouldn't push through, because they'll just keep getting worse. And some stress fractures are like a femur stress fracture is like absolutely like, no, you have to stop. There is like no conversation. But then people do push through things like metatarsal fractures. I still wouldn't recommend it, but you know, it happens.
Yeah. Last year I did resistance band training because I can't get to a gym, and it's time wise, it's a little difficult for me. So I picked up a set of resistance bands and did some hiking up in the Adirondacks, didn't get out and do the long distance type of hiking I like to do, but I did feel a difference physically. I felt like at the end of the day, yeah, I was still cardiovascularly wise, I still felt like, okay, that was tough, but my muscles just felt like they were recovering a little faster.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a really common and positive side of training, especially resistance training before you go on a hike, is that increased recovery speed. And resistance bands can be so great. I mean, you can do so much in the, like there's a pack of resistance bands that I recommend often. At some point I should like tell them I'm recommending them all the time. Maybe, you know, work out a deal here. But they're just on Amazon and they're just called Ecrola, like Eackrola, I think. And they're just pack of 5 pull-up assistance bands. So like typically they're used if you're trying to do pull-ups and you can string them on the bar and put them under your foot and it gives you a little boost. But aside from that being an exercise option with them, because they're long and thick and they last, you can do so much with them and it gives you good substantial resistance. Like the thickest band I think gets up to like 100 pounds of resistance. It's a little limiting in what you can do with that type of band with that much resistance in terms of what movements are going to be available. But I mean, things like ankle exercises, squats, deadlifts, rows, any kind of pushing variation, all of that is an option with these kind of bands. And so looking into a culture of people that tend to be more minimalist, tend to not go to the gym because outdoor rec is their exercise of choice, a lot of them live in vehicles, myself included, so space and budget, like that setup can go a long way.
Yeah, I started using them last year, and I've got to tell you, I'm happy with them for a number of reasons. I find them to be very versatile. Like where I was able to find exercises to address some of the areas where I'm concerned, such as my ankles getting tired. I was able actually to do an exercise with the resistance band to help give me some ankle strength as well as my back. And you talked about not wanting to be in a gym and be outdoorsy. As soon as the weather was nice, I was in my driveway doing it or on my grass using them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of a fun way to reimagine resistance training for people who just really like don't like to work out inside is like, okay, throw those bands in your backpack, hike up somewhere cool, stop and do your resistance stuff, and then hike back down. Like there are so many ways to be creative with movement to make it enjoyable that I think that is something that's really important. Because if you just hate it, you're not likely to do it, and you're definitely not likely to push through things and like kind of get that overload and that response that you're looking for if you just don't like it at all.
I will be very honest here. I am not somebody who enjoys going to the gym. I played sports in high school, and the part of sports I hated the most was having to go to the gym. I was in good shape, in high school, of course, you didn't have to do much to stay in shape at that age. But
Right.
I am not somebody who enjoys going to the gym culture, so to speak. So yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about them. That's why I wanted to bring that up with you. And yeah, I can't endorse them as much more than I already am. I just, and I'm glad to hear, yeah, that you're saying that that's a good route to go.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, if you do like weights, the weights give you a little more core action because you have to like handle the weights differently, so you don't have like that anchor point like you do with bands. And then the progressive nature of like continuing to increase your weight is a little bit easier. But both when dialed in and done in a way that you're getting close to fatigue, you don't always have. That's another thing that people mistake with like both cardio training and with weight training is you don't have to go to failure to be making changes. Typically, like 70 to 90% is where you want to be. So, like when you're doing reps, if you think about going to the point of maybe you can't do three more, like three reps in reserve is what we would call that. And then ways to progress that would be like say this week you're doing all your exercises to three reps in reserve. Then next week you're doing it to two reps in reserve and then one, and then take kind of a lighter week and then reset. That's one simple way to start getting used to progressive overload. And then another way is if you just stuck with three reps in reserve and say it's 15 reps to get to that point for whatever movement you're doing, but then 2 weeks later it's 18 reps to get to that point, you're still progressing in a way. So you can kind of choose which one feels better to you, and at least that gets you out of the starting blocks and gets you on track. And you can certainly nerd way out in exercise with like tracking and equations and efforts and workloads, but start there. And then if you're into it and you want to dive down the rabbit hole or you're not seeing results, like then go that next tier. But you don't need to start with the really complicated ways to progressively overload, especially in the beginning.
So as a hiker, it's similar to the advice I would give somebody who's going out on a long distance trail. Don't go out there trying to hike 20 miles your first day, right? Start out at 5, and it's okay to leave a little in the tank and build up as you go along.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good connection. And then two, prioritizing anyway, where you actually make the gains, like where you actually get the strength gains and the cardiac gains, is when you're resting. So like when you're sleeping at night and when you're taking a day off every so often to let your body get in there, do the repairs and build stuff up, so the next time you come at it, you have more strength than you did the last time you did it. And so never taking a day off hiking or never taking a day off training is actually actively working against you in most cases.
Now, everybody knows you do stretching before you do an activity. But what about post-activity?
Yeah, so when it comes to warming up for an activity, you should do like something light effort that gets your heart rate up a bit. So not exhaustive, but you know, think speed walk, incline treadmill walk. Like walking lunges, high knees, things like that. Just get your heart rate up a little bit. And then you can go through a series of sort of dynamic movements that get you into like stretched positions. So specific movements would be like thread the needle, which is where you're like on all fours and you kind of reach down and up and you rotate your spine to get your spine warmed up. You can do some like walking knee hugs where you bring your knee up and then butt kicks, ankle mobilizations. Those are all just kind of examples of dynamic stretching that you would do as like pre-workout just to get the joints really loosened up and get your nervous system ready for what you're going to do. And then post is where you benefit more from like the static stretching for trying to like improve your flexibility a bit. So if you were going to do a hamstring stretch, right, the back of your thigh, and you put your foot up on something and you have your knees straight and you bend forward to like feel that stretch down the back, I would hold that for a minute and then move to the other side and then work on like stretching all the main muscles. So like stretch the calves, stretch the hips, and just get a little like 5 to 10 minute max stretching routine at the end, just to help you kind of bring your heart rate down, get your muscles loose, and then like finish your workout with that like nice, so you kind of like slow ramp up higher intensity and then you slow ramp down.
Something I've started doing is trying to have some sort of a stretching routine at the end of my hiking day. You as the physical therapist, I want to ask you, you know, I hike 10, 15 miles. I'm exhausted. I just want to eat and jump into my tent. Not a good idea, I'm guessing.
Honestly, you probably will be fine. I actually recommend that people, if they're feeling stiff, feeling tight and feeling like sore and just wound up, like you feel that kind of intuitive need to stretch, I would recommend in a hiking day trying to do it either at lunch, or if you are somebody that like eats dinner then continues to hike a little bit before bed, do it at dinner. But almost nobody is going to have that energy at the very end of the day. I mean, some people are just more regimented and diligent than others, but I would say a significant amount of people are not stretching before they go to bed. And it's also kind of important to point out that they're fine typically. So it's not saying that stretching isn't helpful and that it doesn't have a place, because it certainly does in terms of like alleviating soreness and just sort of like that stiff feeling. But you're probably not going to gain tremendous flexibility from that. More so, loading the muscles through the full range gains more flexibility. So like think loaded squats are going to make your hips more flexible than just like 30 seconds of a hip stretch. But at the end of the day, if you have that effort in you, the two places I would focus, if you're only going to do two, would be your hips and your ankles, because they're the ones that get the most wound up from hiking. So if you're just like, feel like I can't do anything, but I know I need something, give yourself like 2-4 minutes of that.
Right. So yeah, if you've got the energy, do it, but it's not going to kill you if you don't, because I have a bad back. So with me, I just feel like I have to do some sort of stretching with my back. And you mentioned ankles. Yeah. Just nothing carried away. Just even sometimes just stretching them back and forth while I'm waiting for my water to heat up for my dinner. It's usually all I need to do.
Yeah, combining it with another task that you're kind of like say you're doing gravity filtered water or something while you're at camp, just sort of doing it. And that's again where you could do it throughout the day too. Like you stop to filter, like, okay, stretch out a little bit. And then like if you sprinkle it through the day, you might not feel as like you need it as hard at the end of the day. And then you can just take the luxury of falling into bed and not moving first 12 hours.
Yeah. It's like I said, I try, but you mentioned doing it throughout the day. I have seen, and it's usually younger hikers, so they're probably paying closer attention to this than I am. But I will start now. I see them when we're having lunch at a lean-to or near a spring, take off their pack and just do a few stretches.
A lot of times when I'm doing injury interventions with hikers, we do the series of exercises, stretches, mobility, like whatever their regimen is for their injury. I have them doing it every 2 hours, because you, with about 2 hours of hiking, that's sort of like a normal day's worth of activity. So because you're getting way more than a normal day's activity by hiking all day. So intervening proportionately makes it make a bigger dent. So that kind of like, I think of it like snacks, like exercise snacks or like stretching snacks. So it doesn't have to be this whole big elaborate routine, but just like a little bit and have it in the same frequency as snacking.
We talk about the possibility of injuries ending a hike, but something I don't think too many people admit to is just physically not feeling, not being able to go forward. I think quite a few hikes.
Yeah, just feeling gassed. definitely. Like nothing particularly hurts. I've had that actual conversation with people who like their injury isn't really that significant, and I can tell that they're just smoked and they're kind of just looking for someone to say, hey, go home. which, you know, if you're at that point, you're already kind of have a foot out the door, but I can understand. It's just, it's more exhausting than we give it credit for, especially when we're in like the dream phase before you head out on like a free hike. And then when you're in it, you're like, God, I'm tired all the time.
You hop out on a trail day one, right? You're bouncing along. Day two, you wake up, you're a little sore. And then at some point, it's like, oh,
yeah.
What am I doing out here?
And I mean, yeah. And there are parts while you're in that kind of long haul where you're like, this is the most energized I've ever felt in my life, because you're meeting good people. You're very fit. You're outside, all of those things. But then you also will feel some of your lowest lows in terms of like fatigue and feeling beat up. Every bit of self-care that can help prevent that point from coming, I think, is smart to sort of stockpile along the way.
That's why I wanted to have you back on, Morgan, because as I talked about early on, we put so much into our gear, right? We'll spend a lot of money on gear, put a lot of time into researching, having the right gear, but sometimes we ignore the most important parts of our hike, and that's our body, whether it's nutrition or physically. And you know, that's how we're getting there. We can replace our backpack if we don't like it. We can replace our tent if it's malfunctioning, but if our body isn't prepared and it's malfunctioning, that could be it. That could finish things.
Yeah, definitely. And I talk about this in the context of shoes a lot, because a lot of people get more hung up on their shoes than that same line of thinking. And everybody has a shoe that's going to work best for them. Mm-hmm. And it won't be the same as other people, but necessarily. But the more trained you are, the stronger your foot and ankles, the more neutral your walk pattern becomes, because of like getting things balanced and just being like appropriately mobile, all of those things, the less challenging it's going to be for you to find shoes, because you're going to be able to wear a wider range of stuff because your body is functioning as designed and the shoes are going to work as designed. But if you start to get like really stiff ankles, that's going to close the window on what shoes you can wear to things that are going to be supportive of stiff ankles. If you've got really weak ankles, now you're going to have this smaller window of shoes that need to be more supportive and things like that. And it just can make that whole like subset of gear more challenging. So a way to make that decision less taxing is to focus on strengthening your feet and your ankles.
I like that. That's about the most uncomfortable question I'm ever asked. What kind of shoes do you recommend? Well, right. This is what works for my feet. Okay.
Right. But I know. I almost hate telling people.
Right. You know, what works for me, I can't guarantee is going to work for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've been through, I've been in Ultras, Topos, Hokas, Brooks, I won't tell you which one I'm currently wearing tonight, but he takes that as my endorsement. But I mean, I've trialed a lot of them, and I think that's pretty normal.
Still don't know if I found the perfect ones yet, but probably never will. Somebody's always coming out with something new and better, so which is good.
And then when you think you have it, they change the model.
Right. Yeah. They're going to come out with a different color and charge more money.
Yeah.
Morgan, I want to talk a little bit about your business here. Blaze Physio, which is just incredible. I'm going to let you tell us what Blaze Physio is, though.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah, so it's a mobile physio for through hikers. So I spend March till like September following the bubble on the PCT and just sort of trying to put myself in towns with low resources and where like the highest concentration of people are, and then also where I know people get the most injured now, especially in my third year, having that mapped out a little better. And so I try to be in person in the most optimal spots as much as possible. But then I also do a lot of telehealth. So telehealth will be people who are just in a different spot than me, or like maybe we met in person and we're following up in telehealth as they like continue forward, and maybe I haven't caught back up to them yet. Or maybe I'm ahead of them, you know, however that dynamic goes. And then my whole goal is to assess, is it safe for them to keep hiking? Because something people are often worried about is, am I causing permanent damage? In large, the answer to that is typically no. But sometimes there are injuries that are, like I was talking about, femur fractures, where it's like, if we're suspicious of it, we're elevating it to go get an image, and then let's figure out next steps. So sometimes we're, you know, having to take a little more serious action. But a lot of times they're just movement related issues that benefit from movement related interventions. So like a tendon doesn't heal from a tendinopathy or a tendonitis, as most people know it, by just resting. And that's great news for hikers because that's mostly what they're dealing with. So, you know, we modify stuff, we look at things that are excessively loading it, but we ultimately like need to keep exercising it to keep it going. So, you know, my experience as a thru-hiker and as a PT and then being able to be mobile lets me practice in this way to meet these hikers where they're at and when they need it and keep them going all summer. And something fun in this last season, especially, is the people I met in 22 and then just like social media reads started to trickle out to other trails. And I've done the work to get a lot of different licenses, because you have to have state licenses where people are, like where the person you're treating is. And so I have like the Florida Trail and the Colorado Trail, parts of the CDT, over half of the AT, the whole PCT, the Arizona Trail, some more that are not coming readily to my brain, but I have all of these trails covered from a licensing perspective. And as these hikers go new places, I'm able to be helping with telehealth, which has been really, really fun.
And I've got to think, as a hiker, wow, what a benefit that is, because I've been there where you feel a little bit of pain. I actually got off the long trail in 2017 briefly because I had knee surgery the year before. And yeah, you don't know. So you want to go have it looked at, right? You want to go into town and maybe see a doctor, or it just takes you off the trail like I did for a couple of weeks while I healed, but wasn't really sure. But now with telemed, with your services, I can be on the AT and say, you know what, I've got this unusual pain here, or this stiffness or something, and you're able to advise me and, you know, save me time, because time's valuable to through hikers, and maybe even help, you know, increase the possibilities of me completing my hike.
Yeah, that's the goal. And then something that works really lovely is, because I'm treating through hikers, everybody is on the same schedule in terms of like, you're getting to town and trying to reach out and be seen within a day or two. And so because of that, if you look at my schedule in then at any given point, you look 5 days out, you're like, oh, you're not very busy. You like don't have anybody to see. But then that night and that morning, it fills with these people getting in with those last minute calls, which is exactly how I want it to function, because I want to be available when you need it and get that real time help. So A, you don't decide, oh, I'm just going to hike another section without addressing this, because you know, I can't see them until 2 weeks from now anyway, so maybe it'll be gone by then. And time is money, because if you're in town, you're at hotels most likely and eating town food, and it just gets expensive quick. So trying to be quickly available, and then having like a very lovely community to work with makes the open access to like further communications work well. So like if I treat somebody and they get a little further and they get in a bind or they have a question, them to just text me and like ask me. Don't try to figure it out. Don't make a bad decision. Just be like, hey, what do you think? And I can respond. And because everybody is, again, on the same page, the same schedule, the same community, nobody abuses that, and it lets it work really beautifully. And so we just have this like kind of on demand, keep you on the trail, make good decisions in real time, and try to save as much money as possible as like the overarching like guide of things.
And I'd imagine as a long distance hiker, as an experienced long distance hiker, right, you're able to relate to those things better than if they went into town to see somebody about their issues.
Yeah. And some of the, I think too, like being a PT is the right profession because we're the ones that move people through injury as like in the medical system, versus there's like an overprescription of rest that comes from like other tiers of healthcare. And it's not ill-intentioned. It's sort of in the do no harm side of treatment. It's like, well, rest and go to PT. And it's like, okay, well, that would work in a standard model, even though the rest may still not be great while they're waiting for PT, but like some light activity might have been better, but you know, they're taking the do no harm route. But then when you're on trail, rest and then go do PT in 2 weeks is horrible advice because that time is just back across them $1,000 while they're like waiting for that. And then they lose their trail legs and all that. So I'm thankful that I have PT as the profession, but then also like the through hiking aspect and that experience. I mean, everybody who's hiked a long time knows like things hurt, but that pain is just information and it doesn't equal damage or injury. It's whenever the pain hangs around for a few days or the pain is worse than like a 5 out of 10 or it's not alleviated after just an hour or two of rest. Because sometimes we just get overstimulated. And so our body will throw out a random pain. Like if you've ever experienced this where you're just walking and all of a sudden you just get like a shooting pain in your thigh and you're like, what? That hurts so bad. And like, for what? Like I didn't do anything. And then you like sit and eat a snack, a couple hours go by, you get up and it's gone and it never comes back. You know, that kind of thing just supports the notion that pain is comparable to like hunger and thirst, in that it's just your body expressing a need of some kind or an attention that is warranted. So in that kind of case, the attention was, hey, take a break. And so take a break, it's gone. And then whenever we're more in the injury side of things and things get inflamed and it feels more like damage is happening, you'll get more of those signals because it needs more attention. And so then you have to address it and change what you're doing to try, either with sometimes rest or like modifications, exercises, all the different interventions. But it's telling you, hey, you gotta do something about this.
And we talked about this last time you were on the podcast, how important it is to listen to our bodies and, you know, and identifying the difference between my muscles are just sore, or as you said, you know, they're telling me, give me a rest, to wait a minute, something's wrong here. Morgan, how can we find Blaze Physio for those who are heading out on long distance hikes this summer? Or in the case of the Florida Trail, might be out there right now.
Yeah, right. You can find it at blazephysio.com. That's kind of the home base of my website. And then the social media I'm the most active on is Instagram, but I have all of the standard social media platforms and it's Blaze Physio across all of those. And then I have some resources available looking for guidance on training. I have a 20 workout home series that's just bands, dumbbells, and your loaded pack that's on my website. And there's, you know, different tiers of that if you want to focus on just the hips, just the knees, the whole series, you know, so that's there. And then for the PCT, I have an ebook that talks about the injury trends, which I don't know if we talked about that last time or not. It might have been too early, but I wrote a book about the trends that I see per town, because it was really cool and significant in the last couple seasons that like by Julian, a lot of people were getting like right arch pain, and it was because of the way the trail was wrapping the mountain, it was forcing them to overpronate on the right side. And so it was a really high incidence of bat injury. And then there are sections with like a lot of downhill that increase like shin issues and just kind of stuff like that that's pretty cool. So I have an ebook with those trends and then kind of made it like far out. So you follow it like section by section. So what I've got next, what's typical here, what are some little tips to maybe avoid being in that like typical injury range, and then like the first 800 miles, I have that mapped out because that's where the trends are significant.
That is so interesting.
Right?
I might have to have you back just to talk about the book. I wasn't aware. That is incredible. Yeah, because the book wasn't out, and I don't remember seeing anything about it. That's my fault. I usually follow what you're doing. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I still have to make the 2023 season update. So my like note to anybody who bought it for this 24 season is to refresh before they hit the trail, because I'm going to make those updates in the next few weeks. But something really interesting that just happened was in Oregon, I saw more hip injuries through that state than anywhere else on trail. And there's also a ton of new blowdowns through Oregon that didn't used to be there. And so I think the like extra stress on the hip and the hip flexor is that like swinging up and over all of these blowdowns, and that between in, so Oregon has like two extremes right now. You're either swinging up and over blowdowns, or it's like smooth and flatter, and so you're going faster. And so both of those things would be pretty unique challenges on the hips that weren't in the other chunks of trail. So like that's just like an example of like an update I'm gonna put in the book, but it's been like so fun to like pick out these trends.
And it sounds like something would be so valuable to somebody who's gonna hike the PCT. I just, you know, if I were gonna hike it, I those are the things I'd want to know. Dr. Morgan Brahanan, thanks again for giving up your time, being so generous to share this valuable information with us. And hey, good luck in the 2024 hiking season, and love to have you back on to talk about your book.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
This episode of Pop Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.